Welcome, everyone, to PRT, Paranormal Roundtable. My name is Josh Turner. I'm your host, and with me today is a different cast of characters. You want to say hello?
Hello.
It's Nelly, and everybody who listens to the show regularly knows who Nelly is. That is my wife. And let me get started real quick with the we got PRTpodcast.com. That's our website address. Go there, and if you want to help support the show, you can buy a t-shirt or a sweatshirt or whatever. There's iPhone cases, phone cases, Samsung, whatever you want to call them, cases. And you can get stickers and whatever. So that being said, we're going to get right into it because we have a special guest today. And today I'm joined by a family member, and his name is?
Trey Turner.
Trey Turner.
Yep, and first of all, yeah, y'all please go to that site and buy some of that merchandise. That would be great for Josh and his crew. I am Trey Turner. I'm Josh's cousin, and I'm happy to be here this evening with all of y'all out here and get to be able to talk about some things this evening.
Good. You know what? That's awesome that you plugged my – I didn't even pay you for this. That's awesome.
No, you didn't.
He just plugged me. He's like, y'all go and buy some of that merchandise. I was like, mom, buy it. My cousin is poor. He is so poor. He has one mitten and it's got holes in it. He's like, please, sir, buy some more merchandise.
Can I have one more bowl of porridge, please, sir?
One more bowl, please. That was a very Dickens-y asking. Please go to his website and support him, please. He's barely doing any work right now. I think he's got like two contracts.
Only two, so y'all please go out there.
One is only 6 hours at a swimming pool.
Log in as quick as you can. And if y'all all got a spare 50 or 100, please donate it to Paranormal.
He's just so poor. Jeez.
That's awesome.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, folks. Now, for real, Trey is my cousin on my dad's side. His dad is my Uncle Butch, and he is my favorite uncle. I don't want to say he's my favorite because I don't want to offend anybody, but he's one of my favorites. Let's put it that. He's in the top two. Nobody's going to know who the other one is. But, yeah, he's in my top two. And then his aunt, his mother is my aunt, Beverly, and I love them to death. They're like the salt of the earth people. They have a big 100-acre farm right outside of town, and they've been out there for a long time. So, yeah, that being said, Trey is – we grew up together. We've been very close growing up. And Trey is an adventurer. He has traveled to 40 different states. He's worked as a – he's worked farm, right?
Right.
Farming and ranching, and you've done that most of your life. That's your industry. That's what you've done. Now, Trey knows, and I'll say this, I am the quote-unquote city boy – because I moved to the big city when I was in my early 20s and whatever. So I come around and as Cousin Muff, like, hey, how's life in the big city? And I'm like, well, it's just like it is out there in Thorndale. It's pretty much, the,
As Cousin Muff would say it.
Yep. So we, growing up together, we grew up in the woods, in the country for the first 15 years of my life. And then I moved into town. Now, I didn't actually have any experiences with any cryptids or anything like that until I actually moved into town. That's when I had the experience. And so I have this show, and me and Trey were talking, and Trey was telling me and Nelly.
That was not me.
That's the dog. And then we're actually doing the show here at your folks' house in town, not the farm, but the farm is outside of town.
Right.
A
here
lovely town.
On the west side of Taylor.
Yep. Uh-huh. And so we're in Taylor, Texas, and we're doing the show. So what we were gonna talk about was some of your experiences that you had.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna talk about a couple little things, but you're going to talk about some of the things that happened to you when you were abroad, when you were traveling.
Mm-hmm.
And so that being said, do you want to give a brief bio of yourself, like just kind of let people know who you are? How old are you?
Yeah, I'm out of Taylor, Texas. Farming is my background, agriculture, and have been well-traveled Midwest, out West, Mid-South, Deep South. Went to college in the Deep South in Mississippi, and after that, went to the Midwest to pursue the passion of my youth, and that was farming, growing up on a farm here in Taylor. And just have ran across many colorful people in the last 2 decades with just lots of different stories and experiences that are relative to this show. Have experienced some things myself relative to this show. And yeah, it's just, it's a crazy world out there. I mean, some people say crazy. To me, it's just, it's normal, if you will. And so I'm just glad to be here and be able to contribute to what you got going on here at
Well, that remains to be seen. We'll let you know if you contribute. We'll,
oh, okay.
Don't call us. We'll call you.
You already have, sir.
Okay. So that being said, Trey, you, okay, first of all, you are, I think you're 5 years younger than me, right?
I was born in 80.
Yeah, 80, and I was, okay, so you're 5 years younger than me. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we grew up together. Now, I'm going to start, okay? The earliest paranormal, I think it was paranormal. Okay, and I was going to talk about this on a show we were going to do where we talked about it earlier. The earliest paranormal thing, I think, was around you, okay? When you were little, when you were very little, you lost your grandmother. And I remember her, and she was a very nice woman. And I remember seeing or feeling like the image of her around you when you were probably like, I don't know, 5 or 6. I remember I remember feeling her presence around you. And I remember thinking that that was her. And so when me and you talked about it years later, you had told me that many times you thought you had felt her presence around you, because you're kind of like me, and we have a great uncle who was very spiritually in tune, who had a lot of weird experiences. And I think you and I kind of shared that bond because we both have had a lot of paranormal experiences. And so that was probably the earliest of anything paranormal that I can remember around you.
Right.
And there were a couple other times, I remember when we were little, because we would always like hang out together. So at Thanksgiving, we'd always like that, you know, how you have that weird day after Thanksgiving. It's like, yeah, Friday, and then nobody really knows what to do with it.
Watch UTANM.
You watch UTANM. That's pretty much it. And then Trey and me would always be together, because we'd always like, I'd go, oh, cool, we're going to go to Thanksgiving. And then we'd spend the weekend. I'd be over there at your place, or you'd be at our place. And
right,
we'd always hang out and stuff. Mm-hmm. And we would trade baseball cards and stuff, and Trey would cry and I would get in trouble. That's pretty much the whole way it went down. But no, there was a time when I remember one time, very specifically, you were out at the farm, the house that your parents lived in, and I remember going to sleep out there, and I was probably like 10 or 11, and I remember Trey being asleep, and I remember Clayton, your little brother, who's, you know, played college ball at A&M, and I remember y'all being asleep, and I literally saw something like a light coming from the hallway, and I never could figure out what it was, because the hallway lights were off, there was no nightlight or whatever. It was just a light that would come and go, and I always felt like it was Agnes. Like, so that's interesting there. And then we'll get into that a little bit later too, something else that happened. But I y'all never woke up for that, but we talked about it, and I was always like, I thought that that's what that was, because I never felt anything negative from it. Mm-hmm. And I would actually go out in the hallway and look, but I could never see the source of it. And then I would go to the bathroom, and I'd come back and lay down. So that was odd. My dad was pretty adamant that that's probably what it was. And so, but you have always had sort of a, I always thought that there was like something around you that kind of protected you, kept you out of the light, because you had some really, really narrow escapes, some harrowing experiences, I guess I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always kind of felt like she was there kind of like watching out for you.
Right. I do too.
Yeah. And then recently we lost Aunt Susan, which is Butch's sister, and I always felt like she was, now you have said that you feel like you feel her presence around you too.
I do. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I believe that, because you and her were close. Mm-hmm. And I had a relationship and a bond with her too, because she was one of the Turners that moved away and kind of like stayed out on her own. And that's what I did too. I left the nest kind of and went off, you know, whatever.
Right.
As you did too.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think that's the one thing we all had in common was like we would always go far afield and then come back home, whereas most of the Turners tend to kind of stick around this area.
You were the adventurous ones.
Yeah, we were the adventurous ones. And when I did the eulogy at Susan's funeral, we talked about that. I talked about how I had that bond with her, and me and her talked about that multiple times. She's like, Taylor's such a small place. There's so much out there. You should go check it out. And I did. So I went to Africa and almost died. But anyway, and then I come back and I'm like, thanks a lot, Susan. God, I guess I'll go to Guatemala now. But so anyways, yeah, that being said, when we were kids, you know, now there was another experience, and then you can start talking about what's happened to you. There was another experience, and Nellie, you encouraged me to talk about this. When I was little, I was with my sister Priscilla, and we were walking at the house out in Rice Crossing. What did you call it again, Trey?
It's the Moody Place. It's the one-time governor of Texas.
The governor of Texas, yeah.
Dan Moody. It was his home place, and we acquired it, the home place of the one-time governor, Mr. Moody. And so that's where... I was actually, you know, when I was born in the great city of Austin, Texas, on East 38th and a half Street at Seton Hospital. That's where my first home was, out there in Rice's Crossing, at the old Moody Place.
The old Moody Place. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And that's where Papa was farming at the time, and Dad. And like you had mentioned earlier, never got to... I mean, obviously, I met my grandmother, Agnes. No remembrance of her, but definitely feel her presence around post-death. So,
yeah, she was a very gentle person, mm-hmm. very, very kind person. Now, here's the thing: when the Moody, the governor, now he has a home here in town too that's supposedly haunted, and my stepmom mm-hmm. is on the committee for that to take care of that place or whatever. Now, I have walked by that place, not the one you grew up in, the old Moody Place, but the one in town.
Right.
And I remember seeing a light come on. I was walking, actually, with the guy that I saw the dog man with, and we were mm-hmm. walking down the street one day, literally about a week before I saw
that dog. And that's real close to, you know, where you had the experience with the dog man.
With the dog man, yeah.
Yeah, it's right there.
It's about a block away.
Yeah, I mean, pretty midtown, right off of Main Street, but mm-hmm. Extremely close to... Yeah, to where that happened.
Yeah, I got to about a street over. Mm-hmm. And then there was a light that came on one time, and me and him and another guy were walking, and we were like, what? And then we just like took off running because it was notorious for being haunted.
Mm-hmm.
Groundskeepers, a friend of mine's knows one of the groundkeepers and was telling me stories about that place. Now I lived at the Moody Place out there in Rice's Crossing. I actually lived out there with your grandfather
mm-hmm.
And my dad. I lived out there for about 3 months, 4 months.
You went upstairs, were
upstairs,
you?
Upstairs, yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
Now, I did have some weird stuff. I would hear noises and stuff, but I was more afraid of my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, no nonsense. You didn't hear nothing. Nothing was there. I'm like, I didn't hear anything. Nothing was there. And I just, the only thing that ever stood out in my mind about that place, because it was supposedly very haunted too,
mm-hmm.
was that you would hear the stairs going, kirk, kirk. Mm-hmm. Kirk, and you would hear people walking up and down them, and mm-hmm. I was like, and I remember one time Aunt Susan saying, I would not sleep up there. She was not like a big, oh, I'm scared of ghosts person, but she was like, I'm not going to sleep up there.
Right, yeah.
And as a kid, I did. I had to sleep up there for about 3 or 4 months.
Which is kind of like a treehouse almost.
Yeah,
I mean,
oh yeah.
A lot of hidden, you know, secret doors, and you open up a closet, and then, you know, a door in the closet. That would go into a little part of the attic, and then, you know, you could open, you know, right when you open that door up into the attic, there would be another little door you could open up into, like this little, you know, angled, maybe 4 foot by 2 foot with a 45-degree angle on the, you know, for the, you know, top of it, if you will. A lot of little cubby holes. But I think of that place, you know, being so close to Brushy Creek, and with the lore of, you know, Comanche and stuff like that on Brushy, that, you know, around Rice's Crossing, Norman's Crossing, there's a lot of stuff that
has taken place.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Definitely, because there were like massacres and all kinds of stuff that went back and forth. The Apaches were killed out there. It was a very spooky place. And I'll tell you what happened to us when we were little. Trey, you were a little bitty guy, and I was a little guy. I wasn't very old. I think you were probably, I mean, you were young, real young. I don't remember what the ages were. We talked about it earlier. Mm-hmm. I can't remember.
5 year difference.
Yeah, you were tiny. I don't think Clayton might have been a baby.
Well, I was tiny because I was 3 months premature. I was 3 pounds when I was born.
Well, it wasn't when you were a little bitty baby.
Well, I understand that. But
you were already like three or four, you know, whatever. But we were out there, and I was young, real young, and mm-hmm. my sister was holding you. She was carrying you from where the there was like a horse, like the stable.
Mm-hmm.
And we were walking across the yard, and now you, as you said, in the fall, there are tons of crows,
mm-hmm.
and they're everywhere. And this murder of crows, there was a huge, I told you, Nelly, there were just a ton of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not kidding. There might have been 100 of them in one tree. And it was, now there's been a lot of weird stories about these crows, okay, in Central Texas in particular. This area around Taylor is supposed that they're very malicious. They can be very, and they're very territorial.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, there was a bunch of them in a tree. And I remember the tree almost looking like it was black with these birds, and they all just flew up in the air, and they circled around above us, and they kind of swooped down and went over us, and you were started crying. I mean, you were tiny. I mean, you might have been, like I said, a little over a toddler.
Remember 3 pounds at birth? I was probably maybe 2 months old, so that would have been 3 pounds, maybe ounces at that time.
So you know exactly how old you were when this happened, because I remember you being like a toddler. So you started crying, and my sister kind of...
Folks, I remember none of this.
You cried in baby.
Yeah, you were too young to remember it, because I barely remembered it, but my sister kind of jogged my memory. We were talking about it one day, and she was holding you, and I remember just running toward the house, and these crows following us, and then going mm-hmm. up above us. And then we ran inside, and Bev was in there, Beverly, your mom.
Uh-huh.
And I was crying at that point, even though I was a really tough guy and I was going to fight him. No, I'm just kidding. I ran in scared for my life as a child, and she was just like, it's okay, it's okay. And there was just a whole bunch of them, and it was crazy. And then they all just kind of flew off in this weird pattern. Now, years later, when I started thinking about it, you know, maybe imagination or whatever, but I remember them being in like a weird arrow-looking pattern. I don't know why that I remember that, but it was bizarre. And so that I always thought that there was something around us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, when me and you would play when we were kids, you were a creepy little kid too. Jay would be like, do you ever feel like we're not really alone? I'm like, yes, all the time. Can you please go now? We're playing Monopoly. Can you just please not, let's not talk about it? Because we lived in these spooky places. Like I lived in this spooky house out there on the other edge of town in Rockdale, and then you lived in that spooky house. And so we're like, you know, if we played together, there were probably ghosts sitting right next to us the whole time. So
I'm sure there were.
Yeah. And so we would play together, and sometimes, you know, you'd see stuff. You'd see like shadows and things like that, you know. And I always thought that you, of all of the cousins on my dad's side, were very in tune, very spiritually in tune to that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, that being said, and we talked about that story, I want you to scare the crap out of my audience. No, I'm just kidding. No, seriously, just talk about your experiences. You can start anywhere you want. You can talk about when you were a teenager. And, you know, because you know as well as I do that our town has a lot of legends, and we've talked about that, the lore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can talk and just say whatever you want to say. Now, that's the one story I remember as when we were kids. You take it over.
Well, I think, you know, it started maybe pre-teenage years, you know, growing up in Taylor, running with all kind of different people, junior high, elementary, junior high into high school and on. It being, you know, Taylor's kind of the perfect mix of, you know, white, Hispanic, black, and running with a lot of Hispanic people. You know, you have the lore of the Chupacabra and La Llorona. And I remember one time with, you know, growing up in the country, but mother having her business here on the west side of Taylor. I ran with a lot of people on the west side, and we were over here on the west side one evening, and with some Hispanic people that I ran with, and it was probably multiple weekends, 2, 3, 4 in a row, where we'd be outside on the porch, you know, hanging around the yard and stuff. And, you know, you'd hear this, it'd be one of those August nights, you know, real still, humid, just sultry, sweating. You could hear a pin drop, basically. And then a tree would just start shaking, you know, not violently, but just a pretty good shake, you know, like a 15, 20 mile an hour wind was coming through, but it was still as can be. And, you know, Grandpa would come out on the porch. And he'd say, you know, y'all come on inside. And we'd be like, you know, of course, fighting it off. Come on inside for what? Well, y'all just need to come on inside. I'll tell you about it here in a minute. Just listen to what I'm saying. And so we'd come inside and he'd say something like, did you see the tree shaking? And we're like, yeah, but we didn't think anything of it. He said, you know, you need to stay sitting here right here on the couch. And we'd be like, for what? You know, it'd be like Carlos or Benny and me and whoever. And one of us would jolt out the back door, go back to the porch and like actually run out to the little alley and see what the hell was shaking up in that tree. And he's saying, you know what? Y'all need to get away from there. He goes, there's something in that tree that, you know, when you're older that you'll understand. And, I didn't understand it at the time, but later on, out in the country, with what he ended up in a grandfatherly way explaining to us, actually experienced to the fullest, you know, multiple, like I said, 2, 3, 4 weekends in a row, and with the stuff in the tree, and he would call us in, and then out in the country at a friend of mine's house, we were pulling up to the house one evening. And my friend stopped in the middle of the driveway pulling up. And I'm like, what's going on? And he says, look up there on the roof. So I look up there on the roof and you can see, to me, it appeared to be like a bird. I said, you know, let's just keep going. It's nothing. It's just a bird on the roof. And he said, well, doesn't that bird look a little big? I said, well, you know, maybe kind of, because, you know, like vultures and stuff aren't, you know, going to, you know, be out at this time of the night. They definitely wouldn't roost on no roof. And so we pulled a little closer and he says, well, to me, it appears like it's got something ain't right with that bird. Look a little closer. So I open the door and I get out and it appears to have the head of a woman, an older woman. And so I get back in the truck and I'm like, so what did you see? He said, that damn bird looks like it's got an old woman's head on it. I'm like, it does have an old woman's head on it. What are you talking about?
Which I said, not very uncommon. I mean, Taylor has a lot of these stories of La Chusa.
Right. Yeah. Not uncommon at all. I said, keep driving. Drive right to it, you know? And, you know, because there is also part of the story of what my other buddy's grandfather had told us when he kept telling us to come inside the house. He was like, well, there's multiple things. If you look at its eyes too long, the tree is shaking. But if y'all really went straight underneath it and you saw it for what it really was and you looked at it and it looked at you, then you'd be cursed for X amount of years, or it would take away fertility, or just bad things would happen to siblings, parents, future generations. You know, and I just thought it was, you know, BS, basically. But
until the day you saw it.
Until the day I saw it, and we drove up on it. And I'm like, just, you know, drive straight to it. You know, don't sit here and hesitate or anything like that. Not like you're going to jump out and try to go capture it. But, I mean, I guess I was curious. You know, I want to drive up, and I want to, you know, hey, we're 20 yards out. Let's see it for what it really is, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we go up to it and get out of the vehicle, and maybe I'm at that point to where I'm old enough to understand what people are telling me, like my buddy's grandfather, but still too young enough not to care, you know, and get out. And it's, you know, it looked kind of hazy, almost kind of like, you know, the Predator looked like. And when Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, in those movies, when he would look at it, it
kind of shimmered.
Yeah, it kind of shimmered. And I know that was old school technology in those movies.
Yeah, but that's a very key. People see that too. The shimmering. Yeah.
It was shimmering. And and it had like a very human like head.
Oof.
Did it make a sound or speak or anything?
Not that I recall. Maybe no speaking, but maybe just you could see the mouth opening. Mm-hmm. I mean, as it shimmered, you know, it was a. It went back and forth from an old woman's head to like a shimmer to a bird to an old woman's head to a shimmer. So it was like it was
transforming before your eyes.
You know, right.
Shape shifting.
Over and over and over as the seconds went by. And the mouth opened. Maybe some squawking, nothing, you know, human sounds, that anything that I could, that I can recall that I understood, but it was, and that's what it was like every time.
I'm sorry. Did you get a sense like it was trying to communicate with you, or that it was, but it saw you?
It definitely saw me, and it saw my buddy, and I guess I kind of bucked on what the grandfather said on, you know, don't look into its eyes, or, you know, many bad things will come post that.
And now I know two of the guys that you're with, we're not going to say names or mention anything, but those two actually went down very dark roads,
mm-hmm.
and ended up, they are incarcerated.
Both of them.
For very long periods of time.
Yeah.
Now, you've gone down some dark roads too. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get into a bunch of, so have I. Mm-hmm. We've all done this, but I have not seen the Lachusa, but I know a lot of people who have, and your story like jives very closely with like my friend, his little brother, and you went to school with him too. He claimed to have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
They saw it in a crabapple tree. Well, we call them crabapples. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a different definition of what those are, but we all they're good for is throwing at people. You can throw them at their cars.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But, the Lachusa that he claims to have seen was just, that's almost identical with what you just said. It was the same thing. There was like a weird shimmer, and then there was like a human-like head, like a crone-looking face. And you were asking if he got a sense of evil. Well, yes, he did. This guy, he did. And he was telling us about it, and this happened on the south side of Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very close to where a dogman sighting was, which was the friend of mine's grandmother, who saw the man sleeping under the railroad tracks that looked like a werewolf. And you know about that story. This is a very common theme, folks. This is not, if people really knew how we grew up. It's very, people are like, oh, paranormal. Well, when you grow up with it, it's just kind of like, it's just life. That's what it is. You walk around the streets of Taylor and something could happen. I mean, I just, when I was a kid, we were all told these stories, and Trey, you know,
mm-hmm.
about the Cadejo,
mm-hmm.
and the Hombre Lobo, which is what I saw, supposedly.
Mm-hmm. And the black dog.
The black dog, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we are told that this is there's certain areas you don't go to. San Gabriel has the black cat, the headless horseman, and all the other stories. And then, of course, in this area, you have the black dog. You have the bruja, which is what that is, the Lachusa.
Mm-hmm. Like a witch.
And mm-hmm. then Anthony, of course, he had a La Llorona experience. And
yes.
So everybody's had something happen, you know, at some point in time. So when you tell somebody, hey, you know, I saw this, they're just kind of like, well, yeah, so was everybody else. It wasn't like you could throw a rock and hit somebody and they'll tell you they saw something weird here, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I actually did that. I threw a rock and hit this old lady. I was like, are you okay? But she goes, nah, I saw a witch. I'm like, yeah, that's what I figured. That's why I threw the rock at you, lady. Yeah, you have a very unsavory look about you.
I remember we were about 14 years old and was out in Thorndale. And with
which, by the way, is only, what, 15 miles from here?
Or a little fewer, yeah.
17 miles from Taylor?
Yeah, it's
not far.
Not far, about a 15-minute drive for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and the San Gabriel is flowing out there, and was with some Meldies out there, and on their bottom, and the San Gabriel through their place probably had banks of, I don't know, 20 to 30 feet, and we were camping out for about 3 or 4 days out there, and all the fathers were out there, so it was fathers and sons, and you know, it was during deer season, and they were like, well, all right, we're all going to bed. Now, y'all kids don't act too damn wild. And so they go to bed, and I don't know if it was one of them playing games, but they were all where they were supposed to be. But you hear some noises going on in the river bottom, maybe a quarter of a mile away, and a crying. Some moaning, some, and it wasn't anybody out there doing any kind of hanky-panky because it was all on private land, and they'd have to go through a lot of brush and a lot of stuff just to do something like that, where they could just pull over on the side of the county road. But nonetheless, we kind of got a little alarmed, and one of their dads walked out of the tent, and I don't know if he was watching us, you know, seeing us getting alarmed or whatnot, but he said, hey, let's take a drive. And so me and my buddy go, and we get in the back of the truck, and we go out, and we drive maybe a half a mile through the property, and we get out. And he actually says, y'all go stand next to this tree. I'm going to walk to the riverbank. And he goes to the riverbank, and my buddy is terrified. I mean, he is literally terrified. And he's like, I'm like, what are you so afraid of? There's, I mean, that was way back over there. And, you know, where we came from at the camp. And he's like, La Llorona is going to get us. You know what I mean? I said, she ain't going to get nobody. What are you talking about? And, he's like saying, no, no, no. I heard it. It was for real, Trey. You know, you might not think it was for real, but I believe it. And he actually, and I know you couldn't get away with this in today's world, but he said, you know what, you stay right there next to that tree. And he said, Trey, come with me inside of the pickup. So we get in the truck and commence to drive away. And my buddy is sitting there crying next to the tree, saying, La Llorona, La Llorona, La Llorona. And so the uncle, you know, just playing games, you know, and just messing with people, you know, during deer season, we turn around and we go back to the tree and say, all right, boy, jumping on in the truck. But he, for whatever reason, you know, just call it the culture of the area, whether he had prior, you know, experiences of dealing with this or seeing this or something, you know, related, you know, La Chusa or the Black Dog, Chupacabra. He was, in his mind, as a 14-year-old, he was deathly terrified with real hot tears going down his face, thinking, if he stayed next to this tree, 20 feet from the San Gabriel River, that La Llorona runs up and down this riverbank searching for the lost child.
Yeah, the lost children, yeah.
Uh-huh. And that, for some reason, she's going to come up and snatch him.
And the San Gabriel has a lot of those stories.
Oh, yeah. A lot. Snively and his gold.
Snively and the gold. Yeah. And Trey Felton. Now, folks, that's not you. That's Trey Felton's a friend of ours, and he owns the meat market in Thorndale. He wrote a book about it, and Snively and his gold. We're going to get into that one day on the show because, Nelly, you know Trey Felton. Mm-hmm. He's a good friend of ours, and he makes the best dang barbecue around. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty, it's saying something because Texas Monthly we've had articles from, you know, New York newspapers that talk about how great our barbecue is here. But I think Thorndale's got everybody beat. I think they're the best. That's my opinion. The other day, me and Trey kind of, you know, this Trey Turner kind of got into it about who had the best. But my opinion, my friend Felton has a good, and he wrote about Snivy and his gold. And so that whole area of San Gabriel is known to be haunted.
Very haunted,
yeah. Black Bull Bridge, you have Hoxie Bridge, you have all those places.
And a lot of Comanche spots out there.
Yeah, they raided up and down that area, and they also drove the Apaches to pretty much extinction out there. Now, Apache Pass is called that because of the missions the Apaches would go there to escape the Comanches because they were so dang mean.
Right. So I would recommend to any listeners out there to check out any of the parts of Milam County that we're talking about,
or Williamson.
And Williamson, yeah. But we're in where the Williamson and Milam County line meet. There's just lots of stuff going on in that area where the San Gabriel River is at, Apache Pass, like Josh was talking about. There is 1, 2, 3 plantation-style houses up and down 1331 from Granger Dam to the community of San Gabriel. That have, I mean, lots and lots of
weird stuff,
crazy things happening with.
Look at Granger Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Underneath Granger Lake is a whole town called Friendship.
Friendship.
It's literally underwater, folks.
Mm-hmm.
In 2000, I know you know this, we could go and drive out there and see it. Part of it came up because of the drought.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all this weird stuff, and you have a lot of weird orbs and UFO stuff that's gone on around that whole Granger
tons
area. Yeah, tons of it. One time there was a giant hog that was going out there, and there was a giant hog that was literally attacking livestock out there, killing people's sheep and goats and stuff. And so they killed it, and it was like over 1,000 pounds, you know, mm-hmm. and it was a record. And then here in Taylor, too, we had a weird record, too. We had the deepest artesian well in the world at one time.
Mm-hmm.
This hot water comes up out of the steam, you know, and people would say that there was weird toad-looking things that would come swimming up out of the water, and people would see them on the shore. Yeah, Taylor, you know that about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Murphy Pond. It's Murphy Park now, but now it's called Taylor Lake. It's not really a lake. It's just a small little thing there from the artesian well. It's a spillover.
The city's diversion from...
Yeah, exactly. And then people would see these dogman-looking creatures at the hike and bike. You know, we grew up with this stuff, folks. I'm telling you right now, it's like a very odd... Stephen King should have been writing books here, is what he should have been doing. Instead,
he's up in Maine.
But he's up in Maine.
He's talking about the Mi'kmaq tribe. He needs to come down here and talk about the Apache and Comanche.
Comanches, because they were way more brutal. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that. Not to take away from the Mi'kmaqs, they got some pretty crazy stuff, too.
Some very crazy stuff.
With the Bigfoot and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But down here, we had a lot of crazy stuff going on. And Trey, I like to say you're pretty good with history, too. You have a lot of history. We are very much related in that way, because when we talk, and Nelly, you know this, me and Trey can talk for hours,
mm-hmm.
and Trey can tell you some history. And so that's one of the reasons why we've always gotten along so well. Yeah. Now, here's another funny thing, folks. When I was traveling through the Western United States summer before last, I was up in Wyoming near the reservations. The area that Trey was at, and he's calling me and telling me, hey, man, you know all that place is haunted. You know there's a bunch of skinwalkers and stuff up there. Be careful. And I'm like...
I didn't say it like that, folks.
Thank you for telling me that, Trey. Now I'm not going to be able to sleep at night in my hotel. And I told my wife, I was like, no, that was Trey just scaring the crap out of me. Because now I don't want to go to bed, because everything that's going to brush against the door is going to be a skinwalker coming busting through, like, you know...
I would think Wolf can handle a skinwalker.
No, he'd be under those stuffies in his closet.
I'd be hiding under the stuffed animals, pretending like I'm one of them. But Trey was calling me like, hey, where you at now? Where you at now? I'm like, well, I'm over here near, you know, I think it was Fort Collins. I said, I finally made it to Colorado. Oh, no, okay, now where you're at, you know, you got evil leprechauns over there or whatever. You know, he was telling me about whatever was every little area where he was at. And I'm like, oh, that's great.
That's crazy. Evil leprechauns, because Colorado State is in Fort Collins and their colors are green and gold.
Green and gold. It's true. The Rams.
Yeah, they are green and gold.
And Trey would tell me, where you at now? And finally, I just started lying to him. I'm at your house. I'm next door. Don't worry about it. We're good. We don't need any more spooky stuff going on over here on this trip.
There is crazy stuff all up that...
That whole area.
That Interstate 25 corridor.
And Cheyenne
is crazy.
And coming down into Fort Collins, you know, and he's telling me all this stuff. And at one point, we saw that big elk on the side of the road. Remember, Nelly? And I was like, oh, God, it's a skinwalker. Oh, never mind. It's an elk. And the guy driving was just like, dude, your cousin is really messing with your mind.
It could have been a skinwalker.
See?
It could have been.
Adjusting his tie.
Yeah. Whatever it is.
Probably
I think,
not,
I see,
but it could have been.
Becomes a murderous skinwalker to me.
You know, the Native Americans... it's a shame, because, you know, a lot of people will write off what they say.
What they say, yeah.
And,
people will pay lip service to it, but it's very uncomfortable.
They'll blame it on whatever lifestyles or this and that that, you know, they partake in. And, whatever. Everybody, no matter color, creed, or socioeconomic, will partake in whatever they feel like partaking in. But it's there's a lot of validity into what they say. And, yeah, I am a history guy. And, you know, if you want to bring history up, I mean, it just, it starts with who was here before us and, you know.
And it was them.
It was them.
Mm-hmm. And people do. People will pay lip service to what they say out of some sort of reverence or respect from the mainstream. But beyond that, they just think, oh, you know, they're just talking. They're just people don't turn into wolves and bears. So they don't believe it.
Right.
They really have no clue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I had a friend of mine that I spent some time with was a Ute.
Mm-hmm.
And Nell, you know about that. And he taught me a lot of stuff about their traditions and stuff. They lived in absolute fear of the Navajo curse because the Navajo and them fought. And Trey, you've been in that area too. And they lived in fear of the Navajo curse. They said, we're in the path of the Skinwalker, and the Skinwalker is a Navajo curse upon our people. And so this guy that I was with, we stopped at a gas station one time in southern Utah, and he's like, we can't stay here long.
Right.
We're too close. And I'm like, too close to what? And he's like, the Skinwalker. And that's the first time I'd ever heard of it. I was like 17.
Yeah.
And it scared the crap out of me. And I was like, okay. And I go, what is the Skinwalker? I never knew what that was. He was like, I was like, what is the Skinwalker? And we started describing it. I'm like, oh, I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
I was 15. I saw that in my hometown. And he said, well, the only way you're going to see that, and what he told me, what Johnny told me was like, the only way you're going to see that is if there's native or if it's Latin, like if there's a Latin area, you know? And I said, well, the legend is that it was Germanic. And he said, well, that's another one. It could be, you know, like a Viking, Germanic, you know, if it's from the white man, the new world or the old world, you know. And then he said, but if it's from here, it's going to be some sort of Latin or, you know, like from, you know.
Well, that's common. I mean, where he's saying where Latin merged with native.
Native.
And so you see that in Western Texas, New Mexico, Arizona.
The Southwest.
Colorado, all the Southwest tribes. You know, where you have that, where they're merging together and then they linked up together and, started being together. And so you get the dark of, you know, the Latin and that folklore and lore. And, you know, and some people, it kind of bothers me sometimes when people will hear the word folklore or legend and automatically put a connotation to it of it's farce
or make-believe.
Yeah, it's not true.
Fairy tales, and it's not.
Right. And that's totally the wrong way to think about it. And, so when you bring those two on the native and they're, you know, it's the natives have their traditional. And then, you know, when, you know, the, you know, 150 years ago when they started getting converted, you know, so it's there's a lot of Christianity mingled with the old way and the old traditions. And then you bring the Latin from the South up into it. And it's so there's just a.
Which is basically in native cultures, too.
Sure.
I mean, yeah.
It is. But
the
Yaqui, you know,
and I mean, the Aztec and the.
Right.
Aztec.
But then that was with Spanish, though. So it that's mixed. And then
it
you
mixed
come
in
up
with
here,
Catholicism.
So it's. You just have a convergence of a lot of different things. And for the people out there in the middle of it that want to, you know, go to the dark side, then lots of different things will manifest itself and take place, if you will.
And then, now let's move forward a little bit because like we've talked about the stuff here in our hometown.
Sure.
Do you have anything else from when you were a teenager or do you want to move forward?
We can move forward.
You want to move forward?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure? Are you hiding anything?
I mean, it's There's lots of things to talk about, but
I remember when you were a kid and you pooped your pants. Remember that?
I'm sure I did poop my pants, but I'm sure I did poop my pants. But
he
didn't
pooped
we,
his pants.
Didn't we all?
Well, we were kids, man. We were little kids.
I just remember. We're not going to talk about the baseball card.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I know what you're going to... Okay, he's going to try to get me back, folks. I'm going to tell y'all now because Trey... Because you know what? Y'all can hit Trey up and
Messenger. No, you're trying to church it up. Go ahead, Trey.
No, because Trey got... I got spanked because I tried to supposedly cheat him out of a baseball card. This kid's lying. And he's lying.
And he's been trying to talk BS ever since.
Oh, my...
Hence all the shots at me.
I was 11 years old, folks.
Because that damn Gary Sheffield baseball card.
It was Eric Davis.
Cincinnati Reds, yeah.
But actually, you know what? It was a Sheffield for a Davis, it was a Sheffield for a Davis, and we were trading baseball cards, and Trey started screaming because he. And what ended up happening? My dad came and spanked me and gave Trey my baseball card. Folks, is that fair to y'all?
Yeah,
you think
bad.
That's fair? Is that fair? I don't think that's fair.
You got your. I mean, I'm not going to curse, but you got your. Oh, it was bad.
I got my butt whooped pretty bad. Well, we were, you know, we grew up with dads that were pretty hardcore. You know, they grew up hard, and that's how they were. And if you acted a fool and you got spanked, Trey was younger than me, so he was like little, poor little baby. You know, give him the card, you savage, and leave him alone. You know, so he went home with my Gary. 5 years old, folks.
I mean, you got to bring things.
Five years old.
Here.
You were not five. You were like
seven. Okay.
Seven, and I was 12 or something. Yeah. And Trey got away with my cards. And then he laughed and thought it was funny because he got away with it. But it doesn't matter.
We need to change the no cursing rule here and just tell things like it really was so I could see how Buster went in there. And
Buster's my dad.
Explain how Buster really tanned his hide. So,
I didn't do anything wrong. But then, you know what? To your credit, though, when you saw me get my butt whooped, you felt bad and you... were quiet after that.
Right.
I didn't want to see it happen again.
Because truth is truth. And I was probably being, a little crybaby.
Did you feel bad enough to give the card or no?
I mean, 70% of me felt bad because it was wrong. sitting there seeing his getting his ASS whooped, I mean, by his dad for something that, all he has to do is hear me scream and he's going to come in there. I mean, I could have been screaming at, the cryptid staring next to me, just looking it right in my face, and he'd come in there and say, "Josh, what'd you do?"
Yeah, that's
and start whooping his tail. But moving forward on the native stuff, and the stuff out west.
Now you got some pretty harrowing stories for that.
Yeah,
and so what I was going to ask you this now. When we were going through Wyoming, I remember we got to Fort Collins and then me and you had talked that night and you had said, "Hey, I got some crazy stories out of Wyoming." So, cause you wanted to scare me, which you're not going to, cause I'm too tough for that. And so, but you did. I always told my wife, I said, when we're going through the Navajo area in New Mexico, it always freaked me out. So me and Trey were talking that night and Trey said, "Well, you're going through that area in Wyoming. It's kind of hairy, too." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, and I didn't really know. I had no clue what area we were going through. It was just that there was all this stuff going on there. Now, I have a listener that was from one of those reservations, and I have not gotten into a real in-depth conversation with him, but he is a native, and he was telling me about some stuff. And now, when I brought it up to you a couple weeks ago, maybe it was like a month ago, and then you said, "Dude, I can tell you some stuff," because you got really good friends with a couple of those guys. And so do you want to get into that?
Sure.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Yeah. Spending a lot of time up that 25 corridor, Wyoming and Montana. Montana, there's the Cheyenne and Blackfeet and Crow Indians. And, Wyoming has... the reservation there, the Wind River Reservation, it is the home of the Northern Arapaho and the Eastern Shoshone. And I have a good friend there who is Northern Arapaho. And, throughout the years that I spent up there, over time, stories were told and some pretty weird stuff going on up there. The source of it. It is what it is. Some people would debate it. I don't really think it's debatable, but there's just some dark things going on up there on that reservation, along with, you know, the reservation north of that in Montana, you know, where the Crows are at. And, but the Wind River, it's the location that it's at in Wyoming, in central Wyoming. Geographically, it's kind of a mixture of plains from the east and, you know, where the plains hit the Rockies.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some, the Wind River Range there is, I mean, there's some land in there, in those mountains that it's pretty virgin, if you will. It's just true wilderness.
Places where most people haven't been.
Yeah. I mean, you know, feet have not touched that.
For generations.
Long, long time, you know, if ever.
If ever, yeah.
You know, and there is many, many legends, which, you know, some people would say is farce, and they would just even close their ears to begin with and their minds down to even listen. So I hope y'all listeners out there will be open-minded about it. But there's just some pretty harrowing stuff. A lot of skinwalker activity going on up there. One story, I mean, there's many stories to tell, but one that I remember him talking about that kind of hit close to home to him, because his one of his uncles was somebody involved in it. And it was about a skinwalker. It was kind of doing its thing within the community. The Wind River Reservation is a mix of Northern Arapaho and Eastern Shoshone.
Shoshone, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the Northern Arapaho, their tribal headquarters, if you will, is in Ethati. And the Eastern Shoshone is in Fort Washakie, and which are both two towns on the reservation there. In Fort Washakie, where the Eastern Shoshone's tribal headquarters are at, along with the jail and the BIA headquarters are also, they happen to be in Fort Washakie and not Ethati.
And the BIA, explained what that is. It's a Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Bureau of Indian Affairs. So the BIA is the federal arm on the reservation. You know, the reservation is all federal land. And so the BIA is, it's basically the police of the reservation. And unfortunately, it's, I mean, the reservation is probably the size land-wise of, I don't know, forgive me if I'm wrong, but maybe the size of like Rhode Island or Massachusetts or Connecticut. It's,
wow.
It's over 2 million.
It's the size of an eastern state.
Right. I mean, it's over 2 million
acres.
Acres. That
And a lot, like you said, a lot of it's pristine wilderness too.
Very much pristine wilderness. And like the amount of authority, if you will, that they have over it is, it's very small. So the representation that they have is per acre, per square mile, if you will, is it's not very, the coverage isn't very good. And so a lot of things go on there, both legally, illegally, supernaturally, whatever label you want to put on it, that just goes unseen, you know.
And you went up there to work, and then you just ended up getting to know these people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And very good people, by the way, and just very...
And Trey, you've always been...
Very good people.
Somebody who gets along with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are... Like me, I would have to fight with everybody before I got along with them. Trey was like, hey, man, it's cool, you know. You were a very... a peaceable person that you can jive with anybody. I'm like that now, but I wasn't when I was younger. But you would travel and you would make friends with all kinds of people. Like here recently, you had a friend that came down from where was it?
Yeah, he was from Wyoming.
From Casper, and he was just here to help you work on a truck. He came all the way down here, folks, just to help him, because you have a lot of friends from all over,
right?
South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
Wyoming, Colorado, and you know, I've met some of these people, and they open up to you. Sure. I've seen that. Like, I've seen them open up to you. People open up to me, too. I'm like, you see this? You see this gun? I'm just kidding. I'm joking, folks. I'm making a joke. I kid. I'm not, I don't do, it's a knife. So then they tell me everything. But no, with you, though, you'll talk to people and they'll just be like, wow. And they'll just start, I've always been blown away by how you could talk to people. And in fact, you taught me that a little bit because I thought, why don't I just talk to people? You know, instead of tying them to a chair and beating them with a phone book, why don't I just talk to these people like Trey does, and maybe I can get them to open up about stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the pen is mightier than the sword.
Yeah. You've always been a very diplomatic person.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've always been able to extract information from people and just share knowledge with people.
Right.
I always thought you should have been a preacher. I still believe that.
I wish I could be a preacher.
You could. You could. You
I believe
do it.
That.
I believe you could do it. Nellie believes in you.
Maybe it's something down the road. Maybe if the door opens up, it's something that I would love to do.
Well, God opens a lot of doors.
He does.
Let me tell you. So I don't want to sidetrack you, but what I just wanted to add to what you were saying that you do talk to these people, and you have been somebody that if anybody could pierce the veil through all this, it would be you, because I know that you have been able to get people to open up and say things that I'm just shocked. I'm just like, wow, they will tell you anything, including me. I've told you things that I never would tell anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I slept with a teddy bear until I was 14. I'm just kidding, folks. I never did that.
Is a Care Bear?
He says I'm kidding, folks, but that is true. Yes, that is true. As full of brawn and steel and gunpowder as he is, he did sleep with it.
That is,
I think it was 12, not 14.
My God! But,
I mean, just as human beings, we're all on an equal playing field here, and we all go through the same things. You know, up, down,
the human condition.
That's it. You know, and everything in between.
You've always told me that too. You've always been like, everybody bleeds red. What is it you say? Everybody has the same blood.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's.
We all bleed red.
We won't get political here.
Please don't. We don't. but you've always said that people are all the same everywhere you've gone.
We are all the
same.
There's
good and bad, and you've met all kinds of everybody in between.
Right. You know, I guess kind of it, you know, initially going up there, an adventurer, to work too. And, you know, and halfway through seeing how it was up there, I remember coming back and telling Mom that that's where I wanted to go to stay. It's kind of a part of America that was still pure, that was still wild. You know, people more good than bad. But it's, you know, you stay anywhere long enough that that's not the truth. You know, as wild and crazy as we are down here in Texas, and just growing up how we grew up in the party lifestyle, the lifestyle I grew up in. And Josh says, yeah, he moved to the city, but, you know, I know I'm from Taylor. We're not that country. We are country, but we're not. You know, I've always had one foot in the country and one foot in the streets. And, you know, you go up there and it's refreshing. And where they're all country, but that balloon gets bursted very quickly when you see things for what they are. And, you know, sometimes I thought that around the next bend of the river, over the next curve and over the next hill in this terrain, I'm going to find Eden. And it's just not like that. People are people wherever you go, and you're going to find folks that are scarred, that are blemished, that fall short, and that are just as human as whether you're from Rhode Island or Washington or Miami or Fargo, North Dakota. I mean, it's all the same. Or Egypt, Timbuktu, or Australia, or wherever you go. I mean, it is what it is. And so going up there, the native people are, I enjoy their simplicity. They listen more than they speak. They're very wise, and it took a while, but as a few of the people up there that I'm very close to now got to know me over the course of time, they opened up to some more and more stories and gave me more revelation to some things of how they really were, that they probably wouldn't have knowing me for 2 days But no one.
You were up there for a while.
Yeah, several years, and the longer I was up there, some very deep stuff was told through some older people in the Arapaho tribe, some younger people, in between age, through tears, through anger, through lots of different emotional states, but just simple truths as they knew it to be. And back to the skinwalker ordeal, a buddy of mine had an uncle who is now passed, and in Fort Washakie, where the Eastern Shoshone, and I say it's not that divided. I say Eastern Shoshone in Fort Washakie and the Northern Arapaho at Ethiti. I mean, folks, these towns, I mean, as far as 2 million acres in the whole reservation, these towns are literally from Taylor to Thorndale, miles apart.
Yeah, it's not that far.
Very close. And they had a skinwalker that was going through and ravishing the pets in the community in the evenings. They'd wake up in the morning and find cats, dogs, just gashed, but not eaten. You know, just left.
Just killed, slaughtered.
Just straight killed, mm-hmm. and left as they were. And they.
Not to interrupt, I'm sorry, but explain a little bit about what the skinwalker was and what it is.
It revealed itself as wolf like, always on 2 feet, never walking on all fours, and always walking erect. And so the older people in the council knew, you know,
whether
they didn't know who it was individually, but just, you know, they have that wisdom, and they know, I mean, without getting any deeper, they understand. And so they actually put in martial law like enforcements of you could not be in the streets, you could not be outside of your house 30 minutes before, you know, the sun went down. Let me rephrase that. So 30 minutes before the sun went down until 30 minutes after the sun came up, you could not be out and about. You had to be inside of your houses.
Wow.
And so
it was that serious.
It was that serious. And it didn't take, you know, maybe 2 weeks or less of this. I'm going to say more on the lesser side of 2 weeks than closer to 14 days of them enforcing this. And so a friend of mine's uncle, who has now passed, him and a friend of his kind of knew what was going on. I mean, not like different people besides them knew what was going on, but they took into their own hands to go ahead and take care of this.
Mm-hmm.
They stayed out one evening, and they saw the skinwalker come into town to a site that had a lot of activity. I mean, these towns aren't that big, folks. I mean, they're pretty small towns. And so, like, you know, the previous 48 hours, there was a lot of mutilations with some pets and, you know, not just pets, but, you
livestock.
Know, people keep, you know, chickens and goats, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, you know. And so they posted up, if you will, and they saw it come in. They had a rifle. They shot, but they winged it, didn't kill it. And so they went up on it, and they saw that it was still breathing. So they called the BIA. And so the BIA show up about 10 minutes later. So the BIA put it, and the BIA it's almost, they're almost like federales, like in Mexico, you know. They're in black fatigues, drive black Tahoes, black Suburbans, blacked out tent, assault rifles on them, pistols. So they loaded up in the back of the vehicle, and they commenced to drive to Fort Washakie to the jail. So these two gentlemen follow them to Fort Washakie. And so when they get to Fort Washakie, they pull in the parking lot, which ain't very big, and the BIA agents get out, go and pop the back hatch of the Tahoe, and they had zip-tied the skinwalker, And so they had took it inside of the jail. They take it inside the jail. But let me mention that he said that when they went up to the skinwalker before the BIA got there, they were watching it. It was breathing, but it was starting to turn slowly back human. Not that, it was always human, but
the appearance.
Yes, the appearance was turning back more and more, you know, the features of it, the features of the face, the features of the hands, the features of the feet. The hair was starting to not as hairy, but, you know, the hair was going back into the skin, you know. Wow. And they said it almost got to the point where they could almost see who it was.
Who it was.
And I'll talk about this more in a minute, but on who it was, and they knew who it was because of a certain family last name that this person was. And there's, on the reservations there, you have light and you have dark, and this was a family through the generations that were known to do dark things and to call upon the dark. So as they get to the jail, the BIA agents take the skinwalker inside. They stay in the parking lot. They stay in about 10 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes. Obviously, the BIA had, it is a federal arm. So they are, it's a branch of the federal government. And so they say about 10 to 15 minutes later, we're talking about the shaking of the trees again. No, folks, this is not Taylor, Texas, and this is not the shaking of the tree over here on the west side. The trees were shaking right here on the Wind River Indian Reservation, and they say about a few seconds later after the trees were shaking, they're wondering what the hell's going on. A black helicopter comes over the top of the jail, lands. When it lands, the two BIA agents who took the skinwalker inside now bring it outside, and they see two people jump out of the helicopter in all black, black fatigues, black helmet with blacked out mask. The four of them, two BIA agents and the two people out of the helicopter, put the skinwalker into the helicopter. And they say it takes maybe 45 seconds for the whole thing to happen. And then the helicopter goes away. And it's just like that.
Was it military?
It's over
or
with.
Was it FBI? Or?
It's just some long arm of the government.
Mm-hmm. The shadow government, as you would say.
Yeah.
And they saw this. They witnessed them taking it. And it had it fully changed back to human?
They did not know because it was covered.
Oh.
At this point. But, Wyoming has... Just like Colorado, it is a, and I don't blame them for this. Strategically, it makes sense. They will make military installations in mountains.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mount Shasta is particular. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Casper, where I stayed at for a few years, you have Casper Mountain, and on the backside of Casper Mountain, I would say everybody I ran across, there's all kinds of stories, folks. About little people and a lot of devil worshiping going on some of the mountains, which is stories to be told later. But many, many sightings of helicopters flying in to the side of the mountain. And if you get too close, because people will mule deer hunt and elk hunt on the backside of Casper Mountain. And they'll get to a certain point, and they don't know where it comes from, and they don't ever really see them coming. But over a certain ridge, down a certain path, they'll see either people walking on foot or vehicles come around the corner, and they'll say, "Hey, look, you can't come any further."
Yeah.
So they know what's they see them. The government sees them coming, and it's they're not going to say who who they are or anything. They don't identify themselves. Just look, you can't come any further. And so, just to keep it that shallow, they could have came from, in 4 minutes, they could have been back wherever they came from, with that skinwalker. And there's many, many accounts of that same type of thing, stuff happening,
Same scenario playing
out. Same scenario playing out. Maybe not going to the jail. It just happened to take place close to the jail, so they took it there for you know, safekeeping, if you will.
And that's all the time we have for this week, folks. Join us next week for the second of this two-part episode with Trey Turner on Native American cryptids and folklore. Good night.